This is Movies for the Blind, Episode 78, Slightly Honorable, Part 2.
Nothing new against the forces of evil, huh, Pappy?
No. We'll get something.
Hello and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. We continue with Slightly Honorable, which has a voice familiar to some people, though we may not know why. I can remember David Letterman and Dan Aykroyd doing imitations of Broderick Crawford, yelling, "Highway Patrol, Highway Patrol," into a radio mic. Crawford is best known for his TV series Highway Patrol in the 1950s. But before that, he was a Broadway star in Of Mice and Men. He won an Academy Award for All the King's Men in a role Sean Penn would later play, and starred as Judy Holliday's gangster boyfriend in Born Yesterday. But after Broadway, and before the rest of that stuff, he was in this film as Russell Sampson, best friend and law partner of John Webb, Pat O'Brien, who finds himself in a bit of trouble lately. While lobbying to get a state bill passed to require open construction bidding, he's run afoul of a corrupt newspaper publisher and district attorney, found his old flame dead, putting him at the top of a long list of murder suspects, and has an 18-year-old nightclub singer smitten with him after saving her from her abusive boss. He keeps telling her to find a nice college boy. So, let's start with the easy stuff first, the politics. In the conclusion of Slightly Honorable. A newspaper headline declares, "Highway Amendment Battle Today. Scott mobilizing attack against Barry Cushing Axis." In his office, John watches Russ paint on a wall graph.
Hey, did you double check on those figures?
Did I ever let you down?
I'd rather not answer that.
Well, if Scott appreciates this, I'll never get the paint out from under my nails.
You'll all have to make sacrifices for the good of the community. You could help the senator present the simple and honest facts.
He paints a line going up.
Say when.
Oh, wait a minute.
He stops.
Couldn't kill that many people in the air with the bubonic plague.
Don't get technical.
He adds a little line going up.
What was that for?
A little paint left over in the brush.
Getting up, John goes to his intercom and presses the button.
Yeah?
There's a guy here to see you.
Oh, a guy, huh? Well, let's see. I paid my rent, paid my tailor. You're supposed to tell me if I'm getting warm.
Very funny. He said he's from the Citizen.
Miss Ader hangs up.
The good side of the press. Better talk to him. Yeah.
He steps out to find him sitting on Miss Ader's desk chatting with her.
Thought you wanted to see me. She's Judah.
I never get a tumble around here anymore.
Got time for a few questions, Webb? I can answer the first one. I didn't kill Alma Bremer. The News Gazette thinks you did.
Cushing set that type.
You mean Cushing's trying to protect someone close?
Oh, yeah, very close.
Himself.
Hmm.
Did you tell the police that?
Sure, I told them. They had a faraway look in their eye. They wouldn't hold him if he walked in and confessed. Senator Scott sent us in there.
Two couriers go into John's office.
The editor keeps banging his head against the stone wall of corruption, but he's running out of heads.
Start hinting that it's Cushing. That's your bombshell.
Yeah, that's swell. You light the fuse, but it goes off in our face. But I'll see how the editor feels about it.
The couriers leave, carrying several graphs.
Webb, you're a one-man war, but if you get to be no political boss, keep me in mind, will you? I've always had a yen to be police commissioner, so I can leave my car in the no parking space.
Miss Ada, put him down for commissioner.
How do you spell commissioner?
John goes back into his office, and the reporter leaves.
Well, don't blame me if I get stuck.
A little missionary work with the Citizen.
John notices Russ pouring something from a glass over the balcony. Satisfied, he steps back inside.
I got two derbies and a great fedora.
Fedora only counts six.
John opens a drawer and finds the knife right where he left it before Alma was killed.
This may be a little bit off the subject, chum, but did you kill Alma?
John holds the knife.
I told you I got a note warning me.
I remember about the note, and I remember it didn't sound very convincing.
Well, maybe you had your own reasons.
Yeah?
There are some cops here, and it doesn't surprise me. Captain Graves and Inspector Frost.
They shift around, trying to figure out what to do with the knife. John hurries around his desk to a far corner of the office and throws the knife so it sticks in the ceiling. Then he and Russ meet Frum and Graves as they enter with Humboldt and O'Leary.
Morning, Jen.
Well, gentlemen, this is an unexpected pleasure.
Hope you don't mind if we take a look around.
We haven't a search warrant, but we thought
that... Oh, you're always welcome. Of course, you have to take pot luck.
All right, boys, how about it?
They look around the office.
What do you suppose they're looking for?
I think it's a treasure hunt where they're supposed to bring back a couple of lawyers.
No, I know what it is.
What?
They're looking for a K-N-I-F-E.
O'Leary nods at a bookcase. John shows Humboldt a little desk toy.
Would you like to try it?
Yeah.
Humboldt.
He glances at Frum.
No, thanks.
Russ goes to O'Leary.
No. You're cold.
He steps away from O'Leary, who's paused from searching through some books, and observes Humboldt searching through another bookcase. Nervously, John looks up at the knife stuck in the ceiling over Humboldt's head.
How am I doing?
Well, you're getting warm.
Russ looks up at the knife.
Have you ever seen one of these?
He opens a secret bookcase door to a bar.
Oh, nice.
Would you like to try one? It's been a long, hard search.
No, thanks.
Okay.
Russ closes the door.
Oh, we have some sliding panels, secret trap doors, false bottoms, and transparent windows in my partner's office. Wouldn't you like to see them?
See if they can find anything in the other office.
Think they can find the other office?
Cheerfully, O'Leary and Humboldt head out toward Russ's office. They close the door, shaking the knife in the ceiling, but it stays stuck, and Russ sighs with relief. John also stays calm. Russ steps beside John as Graves approaches to search Russ, who gives John his wallet.
Hold this.
He tries to search Graves, but gets his hand smacked. John hands the wallet back.
You better hold it.
When he gets searched.
That's a suit. Got a cigarette?
Graves reaches for one, but smacks John's hand as Frum watches.
We're sorry to bother you, Mr. Webb.
That's the trouble with these fortune tellers. You can't depend on them.
Graves raises his hand to Russ, but starts following Frum out as Anne enters. When Graves and Frum leave, Russ and John hurry to the knife and stand under it.
Mr. Whitney!
John moves Anne and the knife falls, just missing her. Miss Ada runs in with the detectives.
What's going on in here?
Anne is on the floor.
That's one of her fanny spells.
Yeah, the excitement, seeing real policemen, everything.
They make up more new games.
They leave again.
I just lost the best years of my life.
Not cheap, Bush. It was a dirty trick, but I had it to.
John tries to wake her up.
Puss, I'll get you a barrel of charge accounts. I'll make it up to you in 100 ways. Honest, I will, Puss.
I've seen everything now.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Russ grins as John holds her closer.
No, Puss.
Later, on the state Senate floor, Scott presents with John and Russ's graphs.
Think of it, gentlemen. The lives of more than 3,000 men, women, and children snuffed out in the past 12 months.
Gentlemen. False figures. Figments of a fertile and unscrupulous imagination.
Senator Scott has the floor.
Figures are sometimes unreliable.
Consequently, we'll give you more than mere statistics.
The truth in asphalt form.
Everything but performing fleas. Really, gentlemen.
Order, please. Senator Scott has the floor.
Four workmen roll out a contraption to Scott.
We have here 12 samples of paving in various other states and a sample of our own. This is an official testing machine. Pressure can be exerted by this machine equal to the wear of millions of cars a year passing over the paving. To demonstrate, Oklahoma.
With a sample loaded into the machine, a workman turns a crank to increase the pressure on it. A meter measures the pounds per square inch. The sample crumbles.
6.6 pressure. Translated, this paving is good for 27 years.
Godina and Cushing sit in the gallery.
It was a good show. I underestimated Mr. Webb.
Another sample is placed in the machine.
And now a sample of our own state.
The crank is turned, applying more and more pressure. Very quickly, it starts to crumble. As the senators watch... The sample explodes into bits.
Good for 7 years. Unable to stand up under the wear of 10 million cars.
not including bicycle scooters and roller skates.
I think it's about time Mr. Webb was picked up for murder.
Godina glances around.
There are quicker ways.
Later, John and Russ enter the office with the citizen reporter.
Uh-oh.
It's been ransacked.
I know. Spring cleaning.
Oh, this is getting a little monotonous.
Maybe we ought to leave it like this. Next time they'll straighten it up, huh?
Walking through the reception area, John and Russ go into John's office, which is in much the same shape.
I don't have to look.
But he opens the drawer to where the knife had been.
John, do you think maybe we offended somebody in the Magician's Union?
What is it, termites?
Cushing, I think. Practically the same thing.
When they hear someone come in, they hurry to the reception area to find Miss Ader looking around.
Well, if this is your idea of a funny joke, you can just clean it up yourself.
She sits with a popsicle.
My secretary.
The men go back in.
Hey, you know, you guys have overlooked something.
What?
The one person who had the best motive for killing Alma Bremer. The best and oldest motive. Jealousy.
At the Cushings.
You know, I'm getting just a little bit weary of this stupid jealousy of yours.
You didn't treat her like that. No, you didn't.
What did you? Maybe you did kill. You crush everything you're tired of. Why don't you kill me?
No, shut up.
You've left me nothing to live for. Go on, kill me. Or I'll do it myself.
What, again? I told you there was always a loaded revolver in the desk drawer.
Cushing stalks away from his middle-aged wife and leaves the study. Stepping to a desk, she sits at it and begins to search the drawers. She finds a newspaper clipping with handwriting on it. The headline is, "Daughter and friends pay final tribute to slain man. John T. Bremer laid to rest as police of five states traces murderer." As Mrs. Cushing thinks, a young woman enters.
I'm leaving now, Mother, and I'll need $5.
She notices Mrs. Cushing's expression of dread.
Mother, are you ill again?
No, I'm all right.
Well, you certainly don't look all right.
Please, child, leave me now. I'm just a little tired. Get the money for your father.
Okay.
When her daughter walks off, Mrs. Cushing stands up with the clipping. She steps away, reading it further. Panicked by a door closing, she looks for a place to hide the clipping. She puts it in the pocket of a jacket her daughter left on the sofa just before her daughter and husband return.
Mother. But Mother...
Leave us alone for a moment. Leave us alone.
You better go, dear.
Taking the jacket, she obeys.
Have you completely lost your reason?
Murderer. You hear me? You're a murderer.
Why must you always believe the vicious lies Webb has put in the papers about me? You, my wife.
Your wife. You've killed me. You've killed her. You've even killed her father. Yes, I know all about it. You killed her father. When she found out, you killed her.
What did you do with that clipping?
She smiles with wild eyes.
What did you do with that clipping?
I'm saving him in the frame.
Walking past her, he searches his desk intently. Later, John arrives at his apartment, unlocks his door, and goes inside, in the dark. He dodges when someone throws a vase across the room at him and misses. Charging through the room, John's met with another thrown vase and grapples with his assailant. They fall to the floor, still fighting in the dark. When they get back up, John punches the intruder and they struggle on the sofa, with John on top.
Kind of soft there, pal. Out of condition?
He turns on a lamp and finds Cushing's daughter under him. He smirks.
Wow.
And takes off his hat.
I'm sorry. Miss Cushing, I presume.
Move over just a little. I can't breathe.
Releasing her neck, he lets her sit up. His face scratched. He looks around at his ransacked apartment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose now that you're out of finishing school, you're doing all of your father's second story work, huh?
This is my own idea. You see, the things the citizen has been praying about him made Mother very unhappy.
Mm-hmm. So you decided to stop all the news right at its source, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Your dad did leave something worthwhile at posterity, didn't he?
He puts a cigarette in his mouth.
Oh, by the way, how old are you?
22. Why?
No, nothing.
He lights the cigarette as she watches, her own face bruised.
Oh, would you have a cigarette?
Don't mind if I do.
He gives her his as he gets another. After 2 a.m. in the elevator.
Mr. Webb, you sure got unusual technique.
Art opens the elevator.
Don't bother, I'll get a cab. Good night, Johnny.
Night, sir.
She walks out.
Wait a minute!
Anne walks in.
I just came to see you to tell you that I'm not going to see you anymore. And you can just stop chasing me because I wouldn't look at you if you came to me on your hands and feet.
Next day, alone again, Art jukes and jives in the lobby, stepping on his heels and twisting his ankles. Cyrilla Cushing returns.
Good morning, miss. Mr. Webb ain't in this morning. He went to the office.
Yes, I know. I just wanted to return this.
She gives him a coat.
Are you feeling better this morning, miss?
Thank you. I never felt better in my life.
With her bruises still showing, she walks off.
Some folks think it's too violent, but it sure is a successful technique.
He goes into the elevator. John walks into the office.
Good morning, Miss Ada.
But she's not at her desk. He enters his own office to find her sitting at his desk.
Why don't you use your own phone?
He steps up to her as she rests her head on one hand and the phone at her ear. Bending down, he notices a fly on the nose of her expressionless face. He becomes fearful and reaches out to her arm. She topples over with the knife in her back. Then he's handcuffed by Graves, who stands behind him with Frum.
Just routine.
And Cushing.
I'm sure you can explain all this very readily. You get the idea, Mr. Webb?
Sure. The whole picture comes to me at once, including the frame.
Let me see. Was it Aesop or Mr. Godina that said, keep your nose clean?
Joyce laughs and pats Cushing's back.
Well, we got you, Webb. Your secretary found out that you killed Alma Bramer, so you silenced her permanently. No use looking there. He won't find his fingerprints. He's too smart for that.
Trouble with you is, Joyce, you think you're Dick Tracy.
Anne enters the reception area with Russ.
By the hair of her head, and he'd even beat her into a great big pulp.
Yeah, that's Johnny. He'd rather beat a woman into a big pulp to smoke a good cigar or anything.
They find the others.
Well, how are you, Johnny?
Hi, Russ. You know my psychopathic friends here, don't you?
Yeah.
Russ walks off.
Hello, Puss.
You keep your hello to yourself, thank you.
Well, Miss Seymour, what were those interesting things you were saying about Mr. Webb a few moments ago?
It was nothing at all. I was just saying that he had a battle with his secretary last night.
Anne, be careful what you're saying.
Well, I don't try to deny it because it was your secretary.
Undoubtedly, Mr. Webb has another alibi.
Now, you're going to be surprised, Papa.
Gentlemen, if you'll excuse me, I have some business to attend to at the News Gazette.
He's writing the cooking column.
Pardon me.
When Cushing walks out, two men walk in. A photographer and a man who gets out fingerprint cards.
Come on, give him a break. Hold the card for him. Thanks.
Graves holds it.
Oh, hi, Mr. Webb. Thanks, Shirley. How's everything?
Okay.
He fingerprints him.
Wife had a little touch of the flu, but she's over it now.
Anne spots Miss Ader's body.
Miss Seymour has some very important information.
She faints in a detective's arms.
Okay, I'll take care of her.
Yeah.
The fingerprint man leaves.
All right, get him out of here.
Take a good look, Webb. Maybe you'll learn.
His other wrist is cuffed.
Listen, Joyce. I like a good ulterior motive as well as the next man. But you're going a little too far.
Unfortunately, Mr. Webb, I must do my duty. Let's go.
Joyce leads them all out into the reception area, where an older man has been waiting.
Mr. Webb, I am P. Hemingway Collins, Secretary of the Citizens Better Government League.
Delighted, Mr. Collins.
Yes, our league is convinced that you are the man to fight corruption in our fair city, the graft and crime that is allowed to flourish by Vincent Cushing, Senator Beery, and District Attorney Joyce.
Well, I'm sorry you haven't met the district attorney, Mr. Collins, Mr. Joyce.
Collins turns to him.
How do you do? How do you do?
I got it!
Russ comes back with a document.
Lucky Judge White owed me $25 from that last poker game.
Oh, habeas corpus, eh? All right, Webb. One of these days, you're going to run out of judges.
He's uncuffed.
Sure, I know. It's Halloween, you're a spook, and you've got to scare me.
Let's go.
Joyce and Frum leave.
Mr. Webb, you are quite sure that is the district attorney?
Well, that's what they laughingly call him around the News Gazette.
Later, the News Gazette has the headline, Why is Webb Free? Cushing laughs at it at his breakfast table.
You better mobilize your defenses, Daddy. It's another $5 touch.
Certainly, my dear.
Looking up at Cirilla, he notices a bruise on her face. Then looks back at the paper, where a gossip column says, It is rumored that little Johnny Webb has an alibi that he refuses to use, hinting that he is protecting some lady's fair name. He crumples the paper and throws it down. John, Russ, and Mike arrive at the office to find the Citizen reporter and a young woman.
You probably don't remember me. I was Manner of the Citizen before your bombshell went off in my face. Miss Felicity, Mr. Webb, Mr. Sampson.
And kind of friend.
How do you do?
She's your new secretary.
Yes. The agency sent me.
And can you type? I've always wanted a secretary that could type.
You know how to bake a saw and a cake? That'll come in handy.
You spell commissioner?
C-O-M...
Splendid. Don't overdo it.
Darling, it's not today. Give me a coat. Oh, you haven't got a coat. Well, I'll buy you one. Come on, I'll show you around the factory here.
They go to John's office.
Why that lad's fluffy mood? What's happened to the old matter, that hard-boiled reporter?
He was fired for hanging out with a couple of murderers and getting the paper out on a limb. Get a load of that.
Mm-hmm.
Matter gives him the Citizen to read.
Well, that reads the same as the News Gazette. Uh-oh. Get that, Russ.
John gives him the paper.
The knife has vanished from the police lavatory.
I could have started sleeping with my windows closed. I wonder if they make steel pajamas.
Matter? With positive proof that Cushing is a rotten apple in the political barrel, get you your miserable position back for you?
The answer is obvious, yes.
Punch into the office in the morning. Your time card will be in the rack.
Maybe I've been a skeptic from birth.
He leaves.
Nothing new against the forces of evil, huh, Pappy?
Nope. We'll get something.
Russ laughs into his sleeve.
All right, but they laughed at Marconi, too.
I don't know why. I didn't think his stuff was funny.
Russ? The murder candidates have narrowed down to Cushing and Godina for my dough. How would the police know that Ada was murdered if they hadn't been tipped off? Well, that looks to me like the good old frame of rule. Mike. Think you still know how to open the safe?
I don't have to know how. I just blow on them.
I'm convinced.
You wouldn't be thinking of Cushing safe.
Miss Vlissingen takes the knife out of the drawer.
What do you want me to do with this thing?
John grabs it.
Give it to me. Look at that. Now liquidate this.
But Collins is back.
Our Mr. Webb.
John passes the knife back to Russ, who passes it back to Mike, who throws it on the desk. Whistling, Miss Vlissingen puts it back in the drawer.
God's crusaders for clean government.
Yes, sir. You ladies will have to excuse us now. We're going out and make arrangements to rob a safe.
Later, John and Russ go to John's apartment, unlocking the door. John steps inside with Russ, who picks up a vase to throw, but Anne appears in a new dress.
Fine.
Oh, push.
You like it? Saw it in the window. Hello, Russ. And I got to thinking that maybe you ought to forgive you and let the dead past bury the hatch.
Mike!
He arrives drunk and laden with documents.
Mike, you got it!
They start going through them.
Somebody must have cheated Cushing. I could have kicked that safe open with my stocking feet.
Here, I'll help. And besides, I was afraid the murderer might come after you next. And I don't want to be almost a widow because my mother was almost a widow once when my father almost died. It was Friday and he got a fishbone caught right in his throat.
Nothing here yet, Jenny.
So Joyce, you're crossing the keys, funny. You know, I heard a few questions.
When John finds Anne has a check for Joyce from Cushing.
What?
Eureka. What's your herald?
He kisses Anne's cheek.
Yeah, I like that, but my goodness, what was it for?
For finding this.
Well, my gosh, I'll find you lots more.
What a headline this is going to make for the Citizen. Joyce sells police department to Vincent Cushing.
That'll hang Cushing to the well-known hickory limb.
It is cute. Must be a grocery list.
John takes it.
And Mr. Cushing does all of his wife's shopping.
And kisses Anne again.
My gosh. Official again?
Oh, certainly is.
Just what is your ambition? To clean up the state, get rid of Cushing, find the murderer, avoid getting yourself hung or standing there playing post office?
This, my friend, is a slot machine prophet for last month and a one-way ticket to the big house for Mr. Cushing, Mr. Godina, and the district attorney.
And Senator Berry. You know it's going to be so easy to put that amendment through. Now it's almost a sin to take that $100,000 fee.
Tell me something else, Jim. I made a promise. Now that Cushing's power is gone, the Giants won't be afraid to go after the murderer.
That proves that the knifing was done by one of Cushing's men.
And very significant, the Godina's cut was less than half after Alma's death.
That proves Cushing had something on him and is liable to be murdered. Look, John, if I'm not too indelicate, where's this going to get you if it don't work?
Matters kids have to eat, don't they?
Later, on the Citizen's front page, Cushing political machine exposed. Matter enters John's apartment, where John and Russ are dancing on a bed.
I smell victory.
Congratulations on the accuracy of your smeller.
Wait, don't say anything till you know who I am.
Who I am?
I'm Matter, the old hard-boiled reporter whose babies have taken up eating again.
You remember him?
Aladdin, the guy with a magic lantern.
Morning, boy.
Hi, Inspector.
Inspector, huh? You don't keep up with things, Webb. Congratulations are in order.
All right, congratulations. You've got them. You're perhaps the DA, the commissioner, the mayor, all three.
As commissioner, my first official duty is an unpleasant one, inasmuch as your anti-Joyce campaign is responsible for my promotion.
Strong, you're trying to tell me in a very subtle way that I'm under arrest.
Webb, I'm really very grateful.
Oh, now, wait a minute, girl. Don't go get my violin.
But the News Gazette has been screaming that you're the murderer, and you are the only logical one who could have killed your secretary. So I've got to take you in.
Well, now, wait a minute, Strong. I can't go to jail now. I've got to have a few hours to figure this all out.
Anne arrives.
Surprise! Ooh, I'm so glad you're here, Inspector, because Smelly Annie... I mean, a certain friend of mine had a dream where the commissioner is the murderer and you were the corn fitter.
Boss! Those dreams have got you slap happy.
Mm, all right, then. Look, I want to show you the dress I got. It's wonderful, and I'm going to exchange it in the morning.
Come on, corn fitter. Let's erase ourselves from the domestic scene.
Okay. I'll expect you at headquarters in the morning. You can sleep in your own bed tonight. It's softer. And besides, you'll probably want to spend the evening with that girl of yours. But don't leave town. You're on your honor.
Thanks.
Fromm leaves with Matter.
Did you tell him I was your girl?
Yes, people say a lot of foolish things in an emergency.
Her hopeful smile dims quickly.
Well, Russ, I'm in a spot.
She turns away.
You ain't no place else, Bevy.
Russ answers the phone.
Mr. Webb's residence? Yeah, wait a minute.
He throws it on the bed for John to pick up.
Yes?
It's Scott.
John, I'm worried about you. I just met Graham, the new DA. Now, he's honest, and he's convinced that you did the murders.
Now, something might turn up. Yeah. Yes, I'm going down in the morning. What about the amendment?
No, we vote on it tomorrow. You know a lot of the boys around here still read the News Gazette.
Okay.
He hands the phone back to Russ to hang up. Then sees Anne holding Cirilla's jacket.
I haven't got enough trouble.
He gets up from the bed.
Call me in for the peace conference.
Russ covers himself with a blanket.
Now, Puss, please.
Don't you Puss, please me. I wouldn't take you back if you came to me on your hands and feet.
The clipping falls out.
And this time I mean it.
She throws the jacket at John. And he watches her stalk from the apartment, leaving the door ajar. A gust of wind blows the clipping toward a balcony and out. It drifts back in through a bedroom window and lands on the floor beside John. As Russ throws the blanket off, John picks up the clipping.
You know, Johnny, there were a couple of other things that could have happened to you today. You could have stubbed your toe or you could have got a splinter under your fingernail.
John tosses the clipping without reading it.
Well, the way I feel... Been running with every nail would make a difference.
He picks up the clipping again and almost throws it into a fireplace, but stops, opens it, and reads.
Cushing's handwriting. How do you like that?
Look. Read it.
He sits on the bed and shows it to Russ.
It's a form out of Cirilla's pocket.
Alma's father was murdered, too.
Look. Alma had this clipping. Cushing discovered it. Now, before Alma died, Godina's cut on the slot machine was just as much as Cushing's. But after the murder, Cushing paid him less than half as much, and this is the reason why. And I'll tell you something else. That throwing knife definitely came from Texas. How long would it take you to pack your pink toothbrush and charter a plane?
From Morganville, Texas?
From Morganville, Texas.
All right, wait a minute. What's the first prize if we get to Morganville in this Philo Vance brainstorm? We stand a chance to lose a good night's sleep.
Well, so if it's a brainstorm, I make the Bastille in the morning.
Okay, chum, I'll get the plane.
That night, a small plane flies over the clouds. At the Morganville service station...
Where's the cemetery? About 2 miles down the road. We'll have this back by 1 o'clock. Thanks!
With Russ riding beside him, John drives away.
Say, Johnny, just what is this cemetery routine? And look, isn't this about the time that Mr. Holmes usually tells Watson what's going on?
Okay. Whoever killed Alma's father came from this town, subsequently left here and committed the other two murders, right?
Quetzal. Hey, I do a pretty good Watson, don't I?
But the murderer did come from this town. Pretty much of a sense, he's got relatives buried here. So we look for the family name on the tombstone. Cushing, Godina, a tailor.
Yeah, but wouldn't the murderer have changed his name after knocking off Alma's old man?
You know, Russ, that's a strange thing. Criminals seldom change their names completely.
Russ grows concerned.
They retain their mother's maiden name or their father's given name. I don't know whether it's a matter of sentiment or pride, but they always retain some part of the old name.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. This is it, I guess.
He stops outside the open, rickety gates of the cemetery, surrounded by fog. As they get out of the car, a bat flies by. Glancing at each other, they each turn on a flashlight and head inside. John looks around intently, while Russ watches him. John glances at him again. And they move on. Wandering through the spooky old cemetery, John pulls his coat collar closer to his neck, and Russ does the same. They keep looking around. A bat flies between them, startling them.
Scared, Bill?
Yeah, little around the edges.
They keep going past the grave markers and tombstones. As he searches for names, John occasionally glances at Russ, who's more looking at the ground. They stop, sensing something, then look behind them into the fog and the shadow. A figure starts to emerge.
Hail, the Lord is come. Repent you sinners. Hail and meet your Lord.
Oblivious to them, the man wanders between them and away.
Repent. Repent you sinners. Hail and meet your Lord. The day of the Lord.
He takes off his hat and kneels.
Repent. Repent, you sinners.
Let's get out of here, chum. It's creepy.
We've come this far. Let's cover all of them.
All right, chum. You take that side and I'll take this.
John walks off, and Russ watches him. Then he walks in the other direction. He goes to two tombstones and shines his flashlight on them. One has the last name of Russell above a first name of Samson. Glancing around, Russ runs off. Meanwhile, John keeps searching. As he creeps past a tree, Russ approaches in the distance behind him. From behind a bush, he watches John, who studies a tombstone, then turns to another. Russ follows him as he moves on. Not far from the two tombstones Russ had read, hiding again, Russ pulls something from his coat. He holds up the knife. John gets closer to the tombstones. Russ moves to throw the knife, but stops and hesitates. Then he does throw it and gets John's arm.
Russ!
He runs from his hiding place and around.
Russ!
As John leans on the tombstone holding his arm, Russ hurries to him.
Oh.
Russ pulls the knife out.
Hurt much? Get to see what he looked like?
John shakes his head, and Russ gets out a handkerchief to wrap the wound.
got to get you into town, Johnny.
No. Give me just a minute, will you, pal? You know something, Watson?
What is it, chump?
I'm throwing the towel. This guy's too tough for me.
Russ ushers John away from the tombstone with the first name of Sampson. Russ's last name below John's on their office door. Next day, with his arm in a sling, John enters that office and takes off his hat. He crosses the reception area and goes into Russ's office.
He was just an only cowboy with a heart and no good in it.
Russ plays guitar at his desk. Somber, John sits down and gets a cigarette out of a box on the desk.
Hiya, Beethoven.
Russ puts down the guitar.
How's the gladiator?
Well, a little creaky around the hinges.
Say, didn't you promise Fromm you'd be at headquarters this morning?
Mm-hmm. Well, I got some ideas I want to talk to you about.
About the murder? Don't tell me you're going to take back the towel you just threw in.
No, I found some more pieces that fit.
I'm all ears.
Russ reaches for a drawer.
Russ, I was wondering how the murderer knew we were going to the cemetery.
The knife is inside.
Well, there's Smelly Andy. She's psychic.
No. No, none of the suspects knew our destination, and Andy didn't know.
You know, Johnny, she wouldn't be a bad kid to have across the breakfast table from you every morning.
Oh, no. No, you've forgotten the Webb pledge. I'm going to remain free from foreign entanglements. Why did you throw that thing on me last night? It hurt.
His hand is on the knife.
You may have had good reasons for the other two. But...
I'm sorry, Johnny. I just tried to scare you off, that's all.
Funny, now that I look back, all the things that pointed to you. Trying to frame me with a knife in the drawer.
But it wasn't a frame, Johnny. It just backfired that way. I wanted you to think it was Cushing, so you'd get him before I had to.
Why? What did you have against Cushing?
After Alma. Johnny, look, he got all of her stuff from the bank, the newspaper clippings, too.
And you stabbed a girl in the back just because she had a newspaper.
She was trying to blackmail me. Now, wait a minute, Johnny. I know how you felt about Alma, but believe me, she's gone an awful long way down that road since you knew her.
Go on.
You know, after 15 years of me doing what's right, she finally recognized me as the guy that knocked off her old man in a saloon fight. And this chummy was an awful skunk. He pulled a knife on me. But so happened I was faster than he was, but the jury couldn't see it that way. I did a Houdini.
And Ada, that was hardly the way to get rid of her.
I couldn't give her 2 weeks' notice, could I? She saw me putting the knife on your desk. Don't look at me like that, will you, Johnny? Thou shalt not kill, huh? My government spent a lot of dough teaching me how to kill. For 3 years, I murdered guys I didn't have anything against. Finally, when I had a reason, it just came kind of easy, I guess.
I keep thinking how you gave it to Alma.
I could have let it turn me in. Was that waiting, Johnny? Those long, drawn-out court trials, waiting for the jury to come in, then the best of them, waiting and more waiting. Johnny, I'm not afraid to die, but it's got to be quicker than the legal way.
Well, that's that, I guess.
Johnny, look. Would you like to let me get to another state? Just for old time's sake, huh?
For old time's sake? You bet I'd like to. You'll never know how much, pal. But I don't think you understood when I said I was fond of Alma.
Russ keeps holding the knife.
I'm sorry.
John stands and walks away. He turns and holds up a chair just as Russ throws the knife into it. John throws the chair at him, but he ducks. Russ stalks out from behind the desk and slugs John, who falls to the floor. He pulls John up, but John punches him, and Russ responds with a blow that sends John across the room onto a table. Russ jumps at him, but misses, and John jumps on top of him on the floor, in the reception area.
Please hurry!
Anne's on the phone.
You're killing me, John!
Back on the feet, John slugs Russ, who charges at John's legs and brings him down. Russ tries to choke John, but is kicked away. Russ kicks him back down, and pounces again. Grappling. They roll over. As Fromm and Graves are driven to the scene, John and Russ get back up. John slugs Russ, who slumps against him, pulling him up. John slugs him again, knocking Russ back over his desk and onto the floor. John runs behind the desk and looks down. He crouches to Russ, who's landed on the broken chair. John sits him up to find the knife sticking in the chair has stabbed Russ in the back. Then he lays him back down.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bill. It's better this way, John. Nice and quick.
He touches John's cheek.
Thanks, John.
He winks, and John sadly winks back before his friend dies. Wearily, John gets up and looks down at Russ. Then he walks away as the police arrive.
Great stuff, Webb. Your girl told us about him.
Gee, Mr. Webb.
He walks out through a crowd of press.
You're a champ all around. The amendment went through. Joyce, Cushing, and Godina are being measured for stripes. Why was that guy dead?
Get out! Get out, all of you.
Ann steps up and takes his hand. She leads him into his office. And later, they ride in the back of a car.
Feel better now?
Sure, a lot better.
Well, then I guess I'll be getting along.
Yeah.
Huh?
But before I go, I want to thank you for everything. If it hadn't been for you, I might never have given this fellow a second thought.
What fella?
But a college fellow, remember? You said. Oh, it isn't that he isn't handsome. 6'2" or nothing. Blue eyes and cute little dimples. And we thought that just as he'd been...
Now you listen to me, boss. How do I know who this moron is? I'd even be a kidnapper or something. I know a lot of kidnappers that got blue eyes.
No, he's college boy.
But I'm not going to stand for it. I'm not going to let you throw yourself with the first good-looking halfback that comes along. Might even have insanity in his family.
Mr. Webb...
And stop calling him Mr. Webb. I don't care if he's 7'2". A sophomore can't open a minute charge account for you. Besides, you don't need a college boy. You need somebody to depend on. You need a lawyer or something.
When they get to his elevator, she's wearing a ring.
Do they always ask that question? About do you promise to obey?
How do I know? I don't get married every day.
The elevator opens to reveal a woman glaring down. She walks out. And John and Ann get in. They see Art slumped on the floor with his face swollen.
Mr. Webb, I'm a victim of your technique.
John and Ann smile. The end. This version of Slightly Honorable was described for Movies for the Blind. Cast of characters: John Webb, Pat O'Brien; Vincent Cushing, Edward Arnold; Russ Sampson, Roderick Crawford; Ann Seymour, Ruth Terry; Commissioner Joyce, Alan Dinehart; Alma Bramer, Claire Dodd; Cyrilla Cushing, Phyllis Brooks; Miss Ader, Eve Arden; George Taylor, Douglas Dumbrill; Pete Godina, Bernard Nadell; Matter, Douglas Fowley; P. Hemingway Collins, Ernest Truex; Mrs. Cushing, Janet Beecher; Miss Vlissingen, Evelyn Keyes. And that was Slightly Honorable. John's two secretaries don't fare too well in this film, but the actresses playing them would do better. Miss Vlissingen was Evelyn Keyes, who played Scarlett O'Hara's sister in Gone with the Wind and also starred in past Movie for the Blind, Here Comes Mr. Jordan. And poor Miss Ader was Eve Arden, who would become a star on the radio and on television as our Miss Brooks, everybody's favorite smart-mouthed high school teacher. You can choose from hundreds of radio episodes on the Internet Archive and other places, and with any luck, I might be able to find a TV episode or two in the public domain to describe one of these days. As for what's next... well, I haven't had time to settle on that, sorry, so no preview this week. But I can tell you that I'm probably going to follow through on something I mentioned a couple episodes ago about doing another Western. So stay tuned. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. The MP3s are currently being hosted by Blind File Sharing, with easy, affordable, and accessible file storage and transfer with visually impaired users in mind. To find out more, visit blindfilesharing.com. The movies are from the Internet Archive, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.